The Tom Woods Show, episode 2256.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, we all know it is time for us to break up, but everybody's status quo bias is standing in the way of this obvious and humane solution. Check out my brand new ebook called National Divorce, The Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences, which you can get for free at nationaldivorce.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I am delighted to welcome to the show Luke Tatum, who is CEO of Perfect Spiral Capital. And for our purposes, the significance of Luke's presence here is his brand new book, Between the Lies, How to Reclaim Your Future from the Banks and Wall Street. So Luke, welcome.
Thank you very much, Tom. Happy to be here.
All right, let's dig into this by starting off with an overview of where people go wrong. When people think about work and money and saving and the future and retirement, is there a narrative that they're following that is warped in some way?
I certainly think so. Yes, that's a great starting point. So what I really see out there and what I've seen being taught by financial offices, financial firms, big name places that you see in every street corner of every major city is, well, hey, throw every dollar you can possibly manage to into your tax qualified retirement plans. Make sure you have a really high credit score so that you can always get the best rates for all of your financing needs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, what payment can you afford on something instead of how much are you actually going to pay over the long run for something that you finance? Just, it's a particular set of beliefs and views on money that are basically enforced, knowingly or unknowingly, by virtually everyone that you interact with, friends, family, coworkers, certainly salespeople. And to me, that's a problem.
Yeah, no kidding. And yet you can understand why people fall into a variety of traps because all the advice they get tells them the same thing. It's, in a way, it's analogous to the nutritional advice they get. You should eat low fat and you should follow Michelle Obama's nutrition guidelines from 1973. And I'm not surprised when people go down this path because what other thing has been proposed to them? And secondly, I think they look around and they realize even before price inflation started to take off recently, even when it was technically low, people still understood that that low inflation accumulates over time. So they can't just pile up dollar bills in a bank. So they got to do something. And the something seems to be this neatly packaged answer of, oh, well, here, throw your money into this little retirement account. And then they get some magic numbers about what happens with compound interest and how many millions they'll have at the end of the thing. So I understand why people would think that, well, okay, then I guess that's that. That's all I need to do.
Right, absolutely. And part of what I was trying to do with the book is to show that what they're saying is not really what is going to occur. And to the degree that you understand that, I think that that also leads to your ability to break free from it. So that's why part one of the book is really, hey, wake up. And then let's look at these things and break them down. And it's a non-falsifiable, like quoting from the horse's mouth kind of a thing, where we can say, okay, what does a tax-qualified retirement account actually do over time? Let's use some other things than the average annual rate of return to interpret the data here. Because if you just look at something and say, ah, this is average, let's say a mutual fund, you say it's averaged 10% average annual rate of return over the last 10 years. Well, that really doesn't mean what you think it means. You'd think that you could take a number and multiply by 1.1 10 times and get the growth of your investment over those 10 years, but that's not true. It depends on what the actual returns or losses in each of those years are. And one of the things that I have there laid out in the book is very clear proof of that. You can have a, on paper, extremely high rate of return and have a zero actual growth investment. And so it's just, why is this focused on? Why is this the only thing that anyone talks about? Why is this average annual rate of return the number that the SEC and FINRA and all these organizations require brokerage firms to show when they're talking about investments? I don't know. Maybe they have the best of intentions, Tom. I couldn't tell you for sure. But it's not actually helpful or useful in any real way to display those numbers. And so you have people basically signing up for a job. They say, hey, we'll match what you contribute to your 401k or your Roth. So just sign right here and your retirement is guaranteed. It's basically how the advice is given. And it's just not true.
Let's go into the section on banks where you say banks are not your friend.
Sure.
Because that's interesting. Of course, I know where you're going with it because I read it. But just to play devil's advocate, well, bank is my friend because it provides a valuable service for me. It provides a service where my money can be safely stored. I can write checks on it. That's a great convenience. I can withdraw money at my convenience all over the world. Sure, it's not going to give me if I put it in a CD or a savings account, I'm going to get a paltry return, but that's not what I'm looking for the bank to do for me. I'm just looking for a warehousing and check writing institution, and it's pretty good at that. And that's all I need it for. So it doesn't matter. Because from my point of view, that is all I need a bank for, is convenience. What are the problems, though? What are the traps people can fall into?
Right, sure. We all think of a bank as a safe place for your money. The common expression, you can take that to the bank. By some mechanism, we've all come to associate banks with safety. And maybe that was true at a particular point in time. That's debatable. But we have, as listeners of your show know, we have a fractional reserve system here in the United States and certainly broadly across the world in many places. But all of the money that you put into the bank is not just sitting there waiting for you to come back and get it. And from the bank's standpoint, the money that you have on deposit is a liability for the bank because you could walk in and request it. From the standpoint of the banker, that's a loss when you walk in and request your money. And so it's important to sort of look on the other side of the counter at the bank and think, what is the bank getting out of this? Well, the bank is going to take your money, and through the magic of the Federal Reserve System and all these other mechanisms that are extraordinarily complicated, they are going to make new money out of nothing and lend that to other people and earn an interest rate on it. And they're going to divide up the profits with their shareholders at Bank of America or whatever bank we're talking about. And they are going to do very, very, very well with your money. And you're not, as you alluded to, in a savings account or a CD or something, you'll earn something. Certainly interest rates have gone up recently, but you're not going to earn anything like the hand over fist profits that the bank itself is earning. Banking is sometimes called the best business in the world, only if you're the banker, of course. And so, well, the problem with that, though, is that you are getting these useful services, the debit card services, things like that. I mean, I have a debit card. It's not that I'm telling you that you should not have a debit card or the ability to write a check, but you're going to run into problems if the bank needs money. And so currently in the U.S., we have what's called the Dodd-Frank Act that's been on the books for several years.
And I was going to bring this up because I thought it was interesting that you mentioned that in such a short book that you made provision to talk about that.
Yeah. And so the Dodd-Frank Act, I mean, among other things, it is a huge bill that contains all sorts of things. But for the purposes of the book, for the purposes of this story that I'm telling, the critical thing that you need to know is a bank that is having financial difficulty can legally now not give you your money. They can give you stock in the bank that is failing. So imagine 2008, Great Recession type environment again, or perhaps something worse. And you need to get your money out. You need to go buy hard assets or gold and silver or whatever it is you think that you need to buy. And you go to the bank or you log into your banking app or whatever it is, and you request your money and they can just tell you no. And eventually, once the quote-unquote banking holiday is over, whenever they're ready to settle accounts, they can say, well, we don't have your money, but here's some shares in Citibank or shares in whatever bank you bank with. Or, you know, and that could apply to a credit union. It doesn't matter. Credit unions are better than banks in many ways, but wherever it is that you bank, they are allowed to do this. And so that's not really a good deal. I mean, not only is it just equity in a bank, but it's equity in a bank that was engaged in practices that led to its financial trouble in the first place. So it's something that has already been proven to not be worth investing in from my point of view. And that's if they even give you anything at all. Places like Cyprus saw this in the Great Recession, where bank accounts were just simply not ever made good on in any way. They just said, well, sorry, we don't have your money. I don't know. That's not the safest thing I can think of when I think of like having gold bars in a safe. There's a little bit of a difference between those two scenarios.
There's a lot we can talk about in this book because you have a whole section, of course, on Wall Street. But I'm very interested in what practical steps are being recommended by you and by other people. My emphasis lately is on what are actionable things people can do to improve their lives in a bewilderingly odd and hostile world. And you have this very nice little acronym. I like when acronyms work out really well. I mean, maybe you had to twist and turn the words to make it work, but you have it as TRUTH. So you have five things. I'm kind of interested in number three, but I suppose maybe we should say a bit about them all. This is sort of like the Luke Tatum program for protecting your money and being financially sensible in a world full of dangerous advice.
Sure. Yeah. So the five steps, thank you for the generous intro there. It's the TRUTH blueprint, and TRUTH breaks down like this. So T is for take responsibility. R is for reclaim your money. U is for undo your debts. T is for transcend your expenses. And H is for help others. And so briefly, to walk through what that means, step one is to go through the painful process of understanding that banks are not your friend and Wall Street is not your friend, and you're going to have to take on this mantle of responsibility yourself. Two is, well, listeners of this show know, and I know you did a great episode a couple of years ago with Bob about the infinite banking concept. So IBC, the infinite banking concept, is using dividend paying whole life insurance as a financial foundation, as a place to store your wealth as an alternative to a bank. And so that is a whole huge entire episode's worth of conversation. Maybe, Tom, if you know the episode number for that episode with Bob, that would be a good link to have.
I'll fish through while you finish.
Okay, okay. And so to not give all the long explanation there, that is a extremely, extremely powerful tool. And it's the difference between giving up your earning potential on your money every time you buy something and not giving up your income potential with that money. So that is a huge deal. And I spend some time in the book kind of explaining the ins and outs of that. But then three, undo your debts, is not just Dave Ramsey advice, hey, you should be debt-free at all times and you should not ever take out a loan of any kind for any purpose. I formerly was a Dave Ramsey person myself until I discovered IBC, but this is a way of paying off your existing debts using your dividend-paying whole life insurance. So whole life policies have a provision called a policy loan, and it allows you to, without any chance of refusal, they are contractually mandated to give you access to your money at any time that you request it. And so you take a loan from the insurance company where you have your whole life policy instead of wherever else. So let's pretend you have a car loan and you're somewhat close to paying it off. You've got $5,000 left on your car loan. Well, if you have a capitalized whole life policy, you can take a $5,000 loan, pay off your car. You have the car free and clear. It's yours. And then you can pay back to the insurance company this loan over any repayment schedule that you choose. It's entirely feasible to have a policy loan outstanding for 30 or 40 years, 50 years. I mean, there's just, you're going to accrue interest if you do that, but there's no mandatory payment structure. They can't seize your asset, your car or your house or whatever you're financing. And like I say, they can't tell you no. So if you have a business idea or something like that, they can't tell you no. It's not subject to bank approval. It's just, how much do you want? Here you go. That's the entire loan process. And so undo your debts, that third step, is utilizing this tool to get out of debt. So for all intents and purposes, you have no debt. It doesn't affect your credit score. It doesn't affect any of these things. And you don't need a credit score to take a policy loan. So that's another plus. But by the time you've eliminated all of your existing debts, especially like a mortgage using this system, you will have a very substantial cash value in your policy with which to then deploy for step number four, which is transcend your expenses, which means raise your passive income and get to a position where your passive income exceeds your living expenses. So the reason that the steps are arranged how they are is because that's, to me, the logical progression. By getting out of debt, you will end up with a pool of assets to invest to cover your living expenses. And then ultimately, you can have whatever level of passive income you're seeking using that system. And you reach step five, help others, which is to encourage others to do the same, to get your other family members insured and utilizing this system. What it essentially is, following these five steps, is getting from whatever position of financial knowledge you're in to having every single person in your entire extended family completely and totally independent of banks and Wall Street forever. They would never need a credit score, never need to go to a bank to ask permission for money to finance anything ever. And it just gets better with each succeeding generation. So maybe that sounds like I'm overpromising, but it's actually relatively straightforward to show how that's possible.
So it should be, I guess, obvious why what you're describing is preferable to what most people do. Because when you're repaying a loan to the bank, you're paying it back with who knows whatever amount of interest it is, and it's on some fixed schedule. Whereas your system is you're in effect repaying yourself. But you did say that if you wait too long, there is some kind of interest that accrues. So how does that work?
Right. And this is all quite confusing. I recommend that anyone, even if they read my book.
By the way, I found it. It is episode 1326. So tomwoods.com/1326.
Perfect. It's a great episode. And I know Bob tackles a lot of the major IBC questions there. So that's an excellent follow-up to this conversation. But Becoming Your Own Banker by Nelson Nash. Nelson Nash is the originator of the term infinite banking concept. And you know, he's the one that really grappled with this idea. And I'm completely indebted to him and his book for all of this. It took me a long time to grapple with it myself, too. I should say that it was a couple of years after I discovered this that I even started a policy of my own and started to practice this, because I thought, that's crazy. There's no way that's true. And over time, I realized it is true. So anyway, to answer your question, you will have an interest rate on your policy loan. So let's say you've accumulated $10,000 in a policy worth of cash value. They call it cash surrender value in a life insurance policy. And so you can use that for whatever purpose, but there is an interest rate. Now, if this is a mutual insurance company, I only work with mutual insurance companies, that means you're also a part owner of that same insurance company. So let's pretend the interest rate on the loan is 5%. Well, if you take a loan out at 5%, it accrues interest. The interest accrues daily. And whenever you repay the interest, you're paying it to a company that you own. So it's sort of like if you're a shareholder at a bank, Bank of America, and the bank loans you money and you repay the interest on a regular loan to a company that you also own, then you're going to earn some of that profitability of that loan activity. Same kind of thing is going on here. But the only people who own a mutual insurance company are the owners of the products. So everyone that's earning a dividend from this company is also insured with that same company. And fine. So maybe a few years ago, you had a loan out there that was cheaper than 5%. And maybe it doesn't make any sense just on the surface to say, well, I could pay 3% if I go through a traditional bank for this loan. Why would I want to pay 5%? Well, the explanation it has, because you're a part owner of the company, you're recapturing this. If they pay you a 4.5% dividend and your loan interest rate is 5%, then what's really your interest rate there? It's only 0.5%. So there's that element to it. But then also, what if the interest rate in the prevailing economy is higher? What if you would have had to have paid 8% interest on a loan? Well, if you can access a loan at 5%, then you're saving 3% right there and you get a dividend. So you can think of it in terms of an interest rate spread. It's actually a lot more complicated than that. And this is something that people get hung up on sometimes, because the amount of time you have to spend designing a spreadsheet to fully illustrate all the little subtleties here is just, it's honestly sort of a waste of time because it is a more efficient way of financing. But the bottom line, the focus of the book is not to present huge spreadsheets. It's to say that you're in control of this. And so even if you have the opportunity to pay the same interest rate somewhere else, should you do that? Well, my answer to that is no. You should pay it to an entity and into a policy and through a system that you control. You know, the Tatum Family Bank, the Woods Family Bank, is going to give you the best possible terms on your lending activity, your financing activity. And everyone has a need for finance throughout their life. You need cars, you need to buy things. So why not use something that you control?
Well, how about this? I understand the approach more or less, but imagine somebody who has not been following this advice, who's not following the infinite banking approach, but is indebted. Now, obviously, it would be extremely convoluted to start with infinite banking, put a lot of money into a policy so that you can then take it out and pay. Obviously, once the debt is incurred and you haven't been following the system, you got to do something. So do you have any advice for people who, let's say they've got three credit cards and one car loan and a mortgage and whatever, what they ought to do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the advice that I give, Tom, is going to be highly individualized, highly personalized, each family and their needs, what their situation is. I come across all the time people who have assets sufficient to pay off one or two or three of their debts right now, and they just aren't doing that. Sometimes people liquidate stock market investments, different things like that, to reallocate and shift things around so that they can knock out some of these debts. Sometimes, I mean, for me, I've been aware of this for a long time, but sometimes people discover just how much interest they're actually paying to banks, especially on the front ends of these loans. And it is sort of a moral outrage because they're lending you money that doesn't exist. And they get really fired up and they're encouraged to restructure things in such a way that they can get out from under that. Now, I should say on this subject, life insurance companies are not inflationary. They're not banks. And so it's not the same moral quandary because they're lending money that is there. It's a sound solution to this. But I would say that in general, look at the smallest balance of debt, the smallest thing that we could eliminate, because I like the feeling, the reinforcing feeling of eliminating a debt. If you got three credit cards and one of them only has $900, well, it would not take very long to start a policy that would get you to $900 in cash value. Depends on the individual situation, but as soon as you can get there, as soon as you can get that $900 in cash value, wipe out the credit card debt, then make the payment you were making to pay off the policy loan. Well, whenever you do that, you have all of the cash value you had before, and you have all of the dividends that you earned while you were making those payments, because this policy will pay you dividends if it's a non-direct recognition company. It'll pay you dividends exactly the same whether or not you have a policy loan outstanding. So if it takes you a year, let's just say, to pay that off, well, you earn a dividend every year. So you have more money than you started with just by clearing that debt. Well, you've also been making payments on your second credit card and your third credit card. Maybe your second credit card now has a balance of $1,500. Maybe you have that much cash value. Let's wipe that one out. And then you do the same thing. And then you can kind of stair step up. And again, every time you do that, you're earning a dividend every single year, unless, and I can't guarantee that they'll pay one forever, but most of these companies have paid dividends for 120, 130, 140 years in a row consistently through all kinds of things. So for my purposes in our life, I count on a dividend coming in and I earn that even while I'm buying other things, even while I'm doing all this other activity. And that's just before you know it, like it might not seem like the most amazing, incredible thing you've ever done the first year of your policy. But once you've utilized it a little bit and you've wiped out a couple of debts, then it starts to, the light bulb really starts to come on for people. And they start to say, wait a minute, I still have all of this money. If you just have $10,000 in the bank and you pay off a debt, you have no debt and no money because you just put it all to pay off your external lender. When you pay off a policy loan, it goes right back into your cash value and you can loan it again. It's like a line of credit. And the line of credit gets bigger. And there's a death benefit. So if something, you know, eventually happens to you, that'll pass tax-free to your family. It's just, it's a whole lot of different things. Nelson Nash would say, well, a whole life insurance policy is a poorly named product. It really should be called a banking system with a death benefit.
Hey, folks, quick sponsor message. If you're like me with Christmas here, you're sending gifts all over the country. And I'll tell you something, your friends already have the gift basket with the sausage stick and the cheese. They've already got that. What they don't have is a massive variety bundle from Omaha Steaks. Omaha Steaks have been a staple of the Woods household since probably 2008. Great value, convenient, and delicious. Well, they are having a massive blowout right now that's made even better because you know Tom Woods. They put together a delicious selection of various gift packages to make shopping for the ones you love nice and easy. Go to omahasteaks.com, take advantage of 50% off site-wide, plus use code WOODS at checkout to get an additional $40 off your order. So send an assortment of mouth-watering favorites like the delicious Butcher's Cut Filet Mignon, air-chilled boneless chicken, ultra-juicy burgers, even easy-to-prepare comfort meals that are ready in a flash. And yes, if you give this kind of gift at Christmas, that makes you, let's be honest, a better person than everybody else. So don't wait. Order today and beat the shipping rush. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code WOODS at checkout. That's 50% off site-wide. And plus, with promo code WOODS at checkout at omahasteaks.com, get that extra $40 off your order. Minimum order may be required. Let's go back to what we started talking about at the beginning. We were making disparaging remarks about a lot of retirement accounts that people have. I can understand how this system is a more sensible way to go about borrowing and repaying a loan, but what does it have to do with retirement?
That's a great question. Yeah. So it's good to go back to that. A point that I try to make in the book is saving and investing are not the same thing. And these terms are used interchangeably all the time. People talk about saving for retirement by putting money into a volatile investment portfolio in the stock market. And so that's not what saving is. Saving is a slow, steady accumulation of assets. Well, what if your portfolio goes down 40%? Did you save? It's not clear that that is the same thing. And actually, it's clear that it's not the same thing. Investing has a possibility of loss. It might make you more money over the long term, but it's also got the risk of going down. And so I'm not telling anyone in my book not to invest in the stock market or not to invest in any particular thing. It's just that you should have a foundation for your wealth in a safe savings vehicle that is not a bank, because as we discussed, a bank is not a safe place to put money. They don't have it. You should have your assets in a place that actually has your assets. And because of inflation, you might want to find something that pays a reasonable rate of return. And again, a bank does not fill that need. So when it comes to the Wall Street thing, though, you can invest in something. You should invest in something, but it doesn't have to be mutual funds. It doesn't have to be a retirement account. A retirement account has, for most people, not seen any income tax. And so what does that mean? Well, that means when you take the money out, when you're retiring, you must pay income tax on your distributions. What is the income tax rate going to be when you retire? I don't know. Most people probably are not willing to guess. Income tax rates change all the time, historically. And so you don't know how much money you actually have in retirement. People will say that, well, it doesn't matter because you won't have very much income in retirement. And so you're going to pay a lower tax bracket in retirement. And well, that may be true if you're planning to live on an incredibly low income when you retire. But a lot of people would like to travel and do fun things and take their family on vacation. But people are trained to sort of think of, well, you have to get ready to qualify for these government programs and assistance just so you can live as long as possible, you know, through these welfare programs. And so that's just, I don't think that way. I think that we should try to design a way to accumulate assets. And the crux of it is, maybe this is the point I should have made first, is that compounding is something that happens when you leave your money alone in a steady accumulating environment, like a savings account or like a whole life policy. If you don't ever touch the money, then it's going to earn a rate of return. And then the rate of return gets reinvested. You have a larger base, a larger principal to earn a rate of return. And it gets larger and larger. And so with any compounding tool, the very best year is the last year. If you earn 5% a year for 20 years, the last year is going to be the biggest amount of increase because it's compounded. But as soon as you take money out, that doesn't happen. You've messed up the whole thing. The compounding resets. The stock market is down all the time. So it's not compounding. And there's also fees and things that come out. Even if your balance is down, they're still going to take their mutual fund management fee. They're still going to take out your account management fee every single year. And so that is how, and I have a rather long-winded example in the book, but that is how you can say, my rate of return in the stock market is 8% or 10%, and therefore I will have $5 million at retirement. But if you do the math using the actual rates of return that the stock market has cast off of the last whatever period of time you want to use, that's not the number you're going to end up with. So how does my solution solve that? Well, it gives you a place where your balance isn't decreasing. It's always increasing. The cash value in a whole life policy will go up on a contractual basis. It's guaranteed to increase every year. And your 401k is not guaranteed to increase. If you can find and show me where it's guaranteed to do anything, then I'll rewrite the book. But they don't say that. There's no guarantees in those documents. It's all subject to be gone. And if you're an Austrian, if you're someone who is wary of some of the things out there in the economy, you might be a little worried about what the stock market might do. And yet, day in, day out, people are contributing to their 401ks and their IRAs and Roth IRAs, et cetera, just assuming that they will only retire when the stock market is up and everything will be fine. I don't think you should play that game with your money, because as soon as it goes into one of those accounts, it's not yours.
Well, I think I've actually blurbed Bob's book on infinite banking concept that came out, I forget how many years ago. Yeah. I think Bob's, but now I can't remember the title, but it doesn't matter because we're promoting your book today, so to heck with that. But I think subsequent books, not to take anything away from Nelson Nash, but have fleshed out what he was trying to describe
right.
in a somewhat more user-friendly way. I mean, I think your book is very, very accessible. No assumed prior knowledge. It's just assumed that you're a person who finds the current environment bewildering and wants to do the most sensible thing. And I think the path you're describing here is quite reasonable. And it's one that many people who listen to this program and who are in my School of Life program have been pursuing themselves with good results. So your homework assignment, given that I am doing fewer episodes the last couple of weeks of December, because I always, every year since I've started the show in 2013, I take a little time at Christmas for obvious reasons. So that gives you extra time when you won't be listening to the Tom Woods Show. You can be reading Luke Tatum's book, which is Between the Lies, How to Reclaim Your Future from the Banks and Wall Street. I'm linking to it at tomwoods.com/2256. Now, do you have anything else you want me to link to? I generally recommend sending people to only one thing. That's the thing I'm sending them to. But if there's something else, you tell me.
Sure. There's a Between the Lies book. It's just a landing page for the book itself. So that has the five steps kind of outlined there briefly. And it's got a little video of me. So that's a good place to go first. But if you wanted to just directly link to the book on Amazon, that's great. It's Kindle right now. Fingers crossed, by the time this episode goes live, it will also be paperback. That will happen in the next couple of days if it doesn't happen today. So
good.
I'm very excited
good.
For both to be available.
I'll have the link right there, but I will link to BetweenTheLiesBook.com, which is a great idea. I'm glad you have a page for that, for the book. So this is all going to be found at TomWoods.com/2256. So thank you, Luke, very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom. I enjoyed it.
All right, folks, before we depart, I have a very useful resource for you that's absolutely free. It's called BooksOfLiberty.com. And it consolidates over 1,000 titles, tags them by category, dozens of categories, also by author, narrator for audiobooks, and formats. So this way, you can find books in our tradition with very specific topics. So for instance, if you want a book that covers law and economics and antitrust, and you want it as an audiobook, you can find something like that. If you want entrepreneurship and technology, they have that. Or a critique of the state and foreign intervention. You filter those and you see Robert Higgs as an author option. You click on him, takes you to his books on those topics. Furthermore, if the book or author was discussed on a podcast, links to the podcast are given on the book's page so visitors can listen to the podcast. If they're available on audio or PDF via the Mises Institute, links to Mises.org are included. So it's a great site we can all benefit from, that somebody, one of my listeners, has done just as a general service to mankind. That is generally why he did it. So check it out at booksofliberty.com. Not books for liberty, booksofliberty.com. And remember that if you are thinking of starting a website or a blog, before you start it, check out my deal where I will help get you off the ground with some free tutorials, some nice publicity like this, membership in my private bloggers group, all free benefits, don't cost you one extra cent, but you got to take advantage of them before you start that site. Get the details at tomwoods.com/publicity, and I'll talk to you soon.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.